Let's turn to Genesis then and chapter 43. And all I'll do is read the verse that I think is the most important verse in this section. So Genesis 43, the verse is spoken by the man who is the steward of Joseph's house. And this is what the man says, verse 23. Peace be with you. Do not be afraid. Your God and the God of your father has given you treasure in your sacks. I was the one who had your money. So let me just remind you then what we are doing on a Sunday morning. Not every Sunday morning. Some Sunday mornings we change and we look at something else. But what we've been doing is taking one of the most central and important statements in the New Testament, which is, God works all things together for good to those who love him. It's a statement of truth in which everything in the life of a Christian, whether that is a good thing, a bad thing, a small thing, a big thing, a tragic thing or a happy thing, a mysterious thing or an ordinary thing, everything in the life of a Christian is taken into the hands of God, and God works that thing with all the other things, and he works them together for good. Now, that's a statement that the New Testament seems to be very proud of, and it's a statement that is meant to be a solid foundation for every Christian. So that as you go through a week and you experience during a week the very ordinary stuff of life, or you experience something very unexpected, you know that all things God is working together for good. And we've seen that good refers to heaven or ultimate glory. And what we've done is we've turned to the story of Joseph to see that truth fleshed out in the characters of this particular family. So Joseph is one of 12 brothers. His father is Jacob. And Jacob is one of the founding fathers, if you like, of the Old Testament people of God. And so by following the story, we are seeing that great statement that all things work together for good. We are seeing it lived out through the lives and the experiences of these characters. So where are we at? So we're at Act 2, Scene 2. So we've obviously covered a lot of ground, and I don't think able to catch you up with any of the ground that we've covered. What I'm hoping is that if you've not been here to follow this, what I say will make enough sense for you to have some meaning from this scene. So we're in Act 2, Scene 2, and the great drama is how God works to take this family of Jacob, his 12 sons, their wives and children, how is God going to take that family from where they live down into Egypt so that they can settle in Egypt in a land or a place that is called Goshen? So Goshen is a territory in Egypt. It's the best territory in the land of Egypt. And so the purpose of God is to take this little family and to bring them to live for centuries in the land of Goshen, where they will develop into a nation. That's this story. And what we've seen is that this little family, they've no idea that this is what God is doing. So as we follow the story, we need to remind ourselves that whilst we know what this story is about, the characters have no idea. So none of them are aware that it's the purpose of God to uproot them from the land of Canaan and resettle them in the land of Goshen. we are experiencing, as we follow the drama, their ignorance about this. So, first thing God has done, he's taken Joseph, son number 11, who was hated by his brothers. His brothers sought to kill him. Do you remember? They threw him down a dry well instead, sold him into slavery. Now, he has risen to be prime minister of Egypt. That's God's stage one. Let's get Joseph into a position of power in Egypt so that he can use his influence for the sake of this family. So God has done that. Second thing God does is he brings a famine. So at this time, the whole world is affected by famine. And it's only Joseph in Egypt who had the wisdom to prepare for the famine. And so Joseph now oversees the distribution of grain in Egypt to all those who travel down to Egypt to buy the grain. So people are coming from the surrounding nations. There's this great flux of humanity, if you like, coming down into Egypt to buy grain. The 10 brothers did this on their first journey to Egypt. They came down, they met Joseph but didn't recognize him, do you remember? And then there was all that tension in the encounter between Joseph and the 10 brothers. They went home with some grain, and what we are now going to see this morning is their second journey down into Egypt. They've delayed going because they were afraid. Jacob, the dad, didn't want them to go because of the conditions that were imposed on them. But at last, they're about to set off on their second journey to Egypt. So if you've got your Bibles open, just take a look at what Act 2, Scene 2 looks like. And just like Act 1 and Scene 1 of Act 2, you've got three characters in this scene. It always seems to be that every scene has three characters. So take a look, and the three characters here, quite easy to spot. You've got the brothers themselves acting as one character. And do you notice how they are referred to? Right throughout this scene, they are referred to as the men. So the men went down, and the men said, and the men did. And that's really interesting, how they refer to all with you as the men. So character number one, the men. Then character number two is the man, the one who is the steward of Joseph's house. We haven't met him before. Here he is now appearing out of nowhere. He's given instructions by Joseph. He carries out those instructions, but his role is the most important role in this scene. And what he says in verse 23 is the most profound thing. So you've got the man. And then the third character is Joseph himself. We only see him briefly in scene two. He makes this kind of quick appearance, and then he seems to disappear somewhere. We don't know where he goes. Off he goes, off stage. And he won't come back onto the stage until scene three. So he's just there for a moment. But he gives instructions to the steward. And he says, take these men to my house and get them ready. That's your three characters. What I want to do is this. I want us to think first of all about the men, these brothers of Joseph. And I want us, if we can, to put ourselves in their position. What didn't they know? Well, you will say straight away, Neil, they didn't know that this man, this prime minister of Egypt, was their brother. They've no idea about his identity. They also don't know that this prime minister is going to be the very man who's going to save them as a family. They've no idea about that. And they've also no idea that is God's purpose to get them into the land of Goshen. They've no idea. So these men, when we meet them here in this scene, there's so much they don't know. And that seems to add to their experience. But what we do know is this. We know that they are preoccupied with food. There's this great famine. They've wasted months before they've had this second journey. So things have got worse for them at home. They seem to be all married with children. Some of them have already lost their children for different reasons. So they're a tragic family, and at this point, they seem to be starving. So first thing we know about them is that they are concerned about food. Second thing we know, that they know, is that they are afraid. Now, do you get that sense as you read the story here? Just how afraid these men are. They're afraid of what they're going to find in Egypt. They're afraid about the man, Joseph, and what he's going to do. They're afraid that they will be arrested. They're afraid that they're going to be treated badly in Egypt a second time. They're afraid about the money that was put back into their sacks. They are afraid that they're going to be viewed as thieves. So the thing that seems to stand out is the fear that is at the heart of these men. And everything they do, everything they say, every event they are experiencing is colored by the fact, shaped by the fact, that they're afraid. This fear stands out in their conversation and their actions. So they're afraid. Third thing that we seem to know about them is that they have a great concern for their father. Their father now, who is very old, and in their society, their father was right at the heart of everything. He was this great patriarchal figure, if you like. They're afraid for him, and they're afraid of him. They're afraid that they might disappoint him. They're afraid that he might die of starvation. They're afraid that they should lose Benjamin, the youngest, and the favorite of their father. And if they lose Benjamin, what's going to happen? What will their father say? What will happen to him? They have this great fear around their father. And you'll see that as the scenes unfold now, as we continue to follow the story. That's what we can see about these men. So let me remind you, they're preoccupied with food, they are consumed with fear, and they are also preoccupied with their father. And with that as the condition, if you like, of these men, they set off to Egypt. So I guess I'm not good at maths, but I think there must be 10 of them. Is that right? There's the 9, then there's Benjamin, the young one. The brother Simeon is in prison in Egypt. And then, of course, Joseph is number 12. So off they go, and it seems to be quite a journey. They seem to stop several times on the way in what they call encampments. And when they eventually arrive in Egypt, from the reading of the text, it seems to be the case that they arrive in a great crowd of people. And there's this throng of humanity coming into some marketplace or even the palace. And there's Joseph. He's on some sort of platform. He seems to be raised up above the great crowd of people. And what seems to happen is this. Joseph is looking out over this a human flood, if you like. And as he looks out, he spots his brothers. And he sees Benjamin with them, his own brother. Do you remember? They are brothers, Joseph. Excuse me. Joseph and Benjamin. Excuse me a sec. So Joseph looks out. He spots them. And then without speaking to them, he gives his steward instructions. he says to the steward, take them to my house and get them ready for a meal. And so the brothers, as they find themselves in this great throng of humanity, they see the steward, they don't know who he is, come to them, take them off to Joseph's house, and there they are left. Now imagine the fear of these men. They have no idea why they have been brought to Joseph's house. They start to imagine all sorts of terrors. And that's what fear does to you. Fear colours the way you interpret events. Fear colours your perceptions. So if you're anxious, if you're afraid, you'll start to make sense of what happens to you by expecting the worst. And that's what they do. And so one of them steps forward and he's going to try to do the best he can. He starts to speak to the steward, as you can see. And he starts to explain to the steward. And there's something about his explanation that is rather tragic. You see him out of fear, seeming to plead with the steward, to plead with him for their own well-being. Understand us, he seems to be saying. We are not the men you think we are. We haven't done the things you think we've done. Now, of course, what they don't know is that that's not how they're viewed at all. But their fear makes them view things in that way. So that's the men. They seem to be in quite an anxious, fearful condition. And they are definitely expecting the worst. So let's take another look at what the steward says to them. So we're in Genesis 43. We've just seen them talking to the steward. And then we have these words. Peace be with you. Do not be afraid. Your God and the God of your father has given you this treasure. What I want to say about this steward is this. In the story, he seems to have the role of explaining to the men what's going on. It's almost as if this steward, I don't think the word is narrator, is it? There must be some other word. But often when a drama is being told, whether that's an opera or a play, you'll have a character whose function seems to be to explain to the other characters and then to the audience what's going on. Now, this steward does that. He explains to them, but he also explains to us what is actually happening in this drama. And as you look at this steward, he seems to have a number of tasks. And his first task is to explain to these men, and it's the most wonderful thing of all, isn't it? He explains to these men that God is involved in all of this. That it is God who is the one who is behind what's happening. That God is the one who has brought all this about. That God is the one who is working through all these circumstances, through all this confusion, in all this mess, it seems to be God himself who is behind it all. Now you imagine listening to that, if you're one of these men, that this foreign chap, you've never seen him before, he's not part of your culture, he's explaining to you that God is at work through all of this. That these great mysteries, these heartaches, this suffering and distress, it is God who is behind it all. That's the first task that this man seems to perform. And take a look at what he says about God. And he says some very interesting things to these men about God. He says to them, doesn't he, this God is your God. So he's emphasizing the relationship between these men and God. The God who is moving, if you like, causing, bringing about all these events is your God. He's not some strange God or a foreign God or a distant God or an unconcerned God. He's not remote. He's not indifferent. He is your God. That's who is behind all these events. The famine, your journey, your fear. God, your God, is behind it all. And then for me, he says the most important thing of all. The God of your father. Now remember, they are very worried about their father. They are fearful about their father. But you, the steward, says, God, your God, and your father's God. And that phrase, the God of your father, I think, is the most important line in this entire scene. It's packed full of theological importance. And I do wish, and I don't think I'm going to succeed in it, I wish I was able to draw out for you the significance of that phrase, your father's God. Let me do my best, and I'm going to do it like this. Jacob had met God personally. Jacob had met God, the father had met God several times. Jacob had wrestled with God. Jacob had been changed as a result of his experience of God. Jacob had been renamed personally by God. So here's Jacob, a man with this rich history and deep personal relationship with God. But Jacob had also been a very poor father. He had failed his children. He had favored some over others. He was a father who bred mistrust amongst his sons. He was a father who would listen to some and not others of his sons. So as a father, here is Jacob, a failure. Now, it seems to me, from the way the story is told, that many times Jacob had spoken to his sons about God. Now, what must it be like listening to a father talk to you about God when that father has failed you? When that father has let you down? Even in this particular part of the story, it's the father Jacob's fault that they're all hungry because he wouldn't let them go to Egypt a second time. So this father is responsible not just for the son's hunger, but their wife's hunger and their children's hunger, because the father was acting stubbornly and stupidly in refusing to let them go to Egypt and take Benjamin with them. Now, what must it be like listening to a father talk to you about God when he has made so many mistakes and he's got so many things wrong? He was a very poor brother to Esau. So wherever you look at this man's life, you see inconsistencies, you see mistakes, you see failures, and yet he talks about God. Now, when you come to our chapter, scene 2, and this steward talking to these men, he says to these men, it is God who is behind all that's happening to you. It's your God who is behind all this that is happening to you. And it's your father's God. And that, just that phrase on its own, your father's God, the one that you're afraid of, it's his God. And it seems to me that the main lesson is this. These 10 sons had grown up knowing about God. These 10 sons had heard about God from their father. But what these sons needed was to know this God for themselves. It was no matter of a knowledge in their heads about this God. It wasn't just, if you like, good enough for them to rely on their father's experience of God. They needed to know this God themselves. And they might have been put off, if I can use such a phrase, they might have been put off God by their father and the way that he was. But the steward seems to be saying that God is doing all of this so that they might come to this point in their experience where they meet God for themselves. The God they've heard about, been told about, been put off, this God is the God they need to meet and they are about to meet in this situation. Now that's what's going on with this steward. And I want you to see that the three, what did we call them earlier, concerns of the brothers are met by the words of the steward. So let me see if I can make it clear. Do you remember we said that the brothers had a concern about food? That's their first concern. This steward answers their concern about their food. He says to them, doesn't he, I was the one with the money. And he brings them to have a meal with Joseph later on. So their concern about food, will we have it? Will they allow us to have it? The steward reassures them on that level. So food, if you like, is a big fear ticked off. The next thing we can say is they were fearful, weren't they? We looked at how fearful they were. Will we be accused of being thieves? Will we be arrested? Will they see us as spies? So they have this great fear about their reception in Egypt. The steward takes them to Joseph's house. And again, that phrase, I was the one with money, is reassuring their fears. So it's, if you like, as they meet this steward, the condition they were in, about food and fear, that's being met. They're having reassurance. They're having answers from the steward. And then finally, do you remember we said that they had a great concern about their father? They'd left him behind. He's very old. Will he still be alive when they go back? What if they lose Benjamin? Will we bring his grey hairs down to the grave? They have all this concern about their father. But the steward answers their concerns when he says to the men, your God and the God of your father. They're concerned for him. They're worried about him. They're afraid of him. But what happens to them in Egypt is that they meet the God of their father for themselves. And they meet this God in the voice and face of a steward of Egypt. They meet this God in the reception they have in Joseph's house. They meet this God through all the provision that is given to them, the gracious way they're treated, the hospitality they're offered. They meet this God for themselves in the most unexpected ways. And so this scene ends with the mention of peace. And if you like, what's happening here, or at least what's beginning to happen here, is the fear of these men is starting to be replaced with peace. And the peace is offered to them through the God whom the steward is talking about. Now that's the main thrust of this scene then. Anxious, fearful men, the reasons for their fear is starting to be addressed. Things are starting to change as they are pointed to and as they meet with the steward who speaks to them about God. Now, that's the scene. All I want to do now very quickly before we finish is saying, okay then, how does this scene speak to us as God's people? And it speaks to us on many levels. If we think about these men for a moment, like them, we can be preoccupied with food. We can be preoccupied, if you like, with the everyday stuff. As we are journeying ourselves to the land of Goshen, our concerns can be about the physical stuff, the stuff of life, the everyday concerns, the bread, if you like, that we need to live every day. So just like them, we can have ordinary, urgent preoccupations. Just like them, as you and I journey, we can be fearful. We can be afraid of what lies ahead. We can be afraid of what might happen to us on our journey. We may be afraid of what's next, what's to come. How may it affect us? How may it shape us? What impact will it have on us? We can have as much fear as these 10 men seem to have. So we can identify with them and their experience of fear. And also, can I say this to you? As we journey, family can also be a major concern to us. Now, I need to be rather careful here, don't I? Because some of us are fathers here this morning, and fathers seem to be a central element in this scene, the role of fathers. So can I say this? Some of us as fathers, some of you here who are fathers, we have talked to our children about God. And just like Joseph, we have shared with our sons and daughters our experience of God. And it may be that we've shared our experiences of God with our children, but also, just like Jacob, same as him, we may also have failed in other ways. We may have failed as fathers and sons. We may have made mistakes. We may have got things wrong. We may have said the wrong thing. We may have done lots of things that within the family have not been consistent with what we've said about God. So we can identify with Jacob then, talking about God on the one hand, and then failing in our relationships within family, sometimes, maybe, to be consistent with what we've said. Now, if that's the case, we can take from this entire scene the truth that God works in the lives of sons to bring them to know that behind all the events of their lives is a God who will bring them to a moment when they need to know that this God is their God. Where this God they have heard about and been told about and even put off about by the weaknesses or struggles of a father, this God is their God, and this is the God that they themselves need to know. That behind all the shifts and changes of life, behind all the fears that life holds, and all the travels that life brings, behind all of that is their God, their father's God, who is bringing them to know him. Now, that's the great lesson from this. And you can see why, can't you? So much more could be said about such a thing. It's about the continuity of the relationship that God establishes with one man, and then he continues that relationship with that man's sons. This is the truth we are encountering. and behind all the suffering and the misery of famine and family failure and travel and Joseph and Egypt and money and all that, behind all of that, is this God who is continuing a relationship once established with the Father. He is continuing that relationship down through the sons. And the sons meet this God in the most unexpected ways. They didn't meet him at home with dad. They met him down in Egypt with a steward. They didn't meet him when they were young. They met him when they were older. They didn't meet him in the comforts of a well-fed home. They met him in the house of a stranger of whom they were afraid. This God, who continues the relationship down from father to son, is a God who may choose to meet the sons in the most unlikely places, in the most unlikely ways, at the most unlikely moments, at the point in the sons' lives where they fear the most. He is most likely to meet with them then. Now, that's at the heart of this story. We can add such things as we journey and we are fearful, fear gives way to peace, and we will know the peace of God. It may be that this story also means as we journey, we need someone to point out, like the steward does, that behind all that's happening to us is God. God who is working it all out, the God who is our God, the God who is the God of our fathers. We need all of that explained to us somewhat times by somebody like the steward, whose role it is to help us see beyond the events, beyond the circumstances, beyond the fears, somebody who can come along and point out to us that behind it all is God, our God. And then when that's pointed out, we know that our fear becomes peace instead. All of that's you. But I would be doing a misservice to this entire scene if I weren't to point out to you that the heart of this story is how a God who was talked about by your father becomes your God because he has brought you to a point in your life where he reveals himself to you as God, your God, not just your father's God, not somebody else's God, but your God. He is your God, and may his peace be yours. Well, let's pray, shall we?